Hello, welcome to Art Speak Radio. Thank you for tuning in to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We just have a terrific lineup for you today. We have artists and makers and movers and shakers. We have with us artist Jillian Youngbird. She's here to talk about the work that she's putting together for Art in the Loop. We also have with us Cassandra Mundt, who's the Community Development Coordinator for the National Toy and Miniature Museum, which opens this Saturday after a year-long renovation. And rounding up that lineup, we have Dave Dalton with Hammer Space Workshop, here to talk about the community of makers, crafters, and inventors. So let's get started. Let me tell you a bit about Jillian Youngbird. She is a multimedia artist living here and working in Kansas City and using mostly recycled and found materials. Now, she creates works that deal with concerns and curiosity of nature, American history, folklore, and Native American culture. Now, by working in this public format, she hopes to bring Native American thought to our downtown Kansas City community. So welcome, Jillian.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Terrific. You know, let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about your work. You use a lot of different materials, recycled materials.
Yeah, recycled and found materials. Part of that comes out of being a young artist.
Sure.
Poor.
Being resourceful.
So I find what I can and use that. Another part of it is just like being sort of a hunter-gatherer.
Yeah.
I like to explore and find things for my art rather than just going and buying them off a shelf. So.
And then there's also sort of, I would guess that there's a political statement too. Purpose stuff that we have here around us.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're consumers and we like to buy things and not reuse them. And I want to try to make art that, you know, sort of sticks around for a while, and if it doesn't, then it has a proper death, if that makes any sense at all.
Absolutely. Now, our dear friend Blair Shulman wrote about your work, The Turn Towards Environmentally Conscious Art. He wrote that your work often consists of installations that provide a closer look at manifest destiny. Her dirt patterns describe American flags on Indian soil and the encroaching destruction of Native American lands. So let's talk a little bit about that. Your work is somewhat political, and it does incorporate again the found repurposed material. So
yeah,
let's talk about
I'd
a little
say,
bit of ideas.
I mean, I definitely try to make some sort of statement. I don't like it to be too heavy-handed, though. I especially with the work that I'm making for Art in the Loop, it's with found materials, and it's a little bit silly. It's sort of cartoony in a way, and the materials that I use make it, I don't know, when I started the work for that, it was a lot about using the recycled materials to make traditional Cherokee masks, and so I wanted to make those masks and, you know, try to make a statement about the environment and Native American culture and my place in it, really. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a personal exploration as well, I used those recycled materials and I did the performances and the documentation.
And then most recently, you also constructed a teepee made of found forest wood for a show, Living Arrangements?
Yeah, that was for my first solo show last August. And it was made with the forest wood, and then underneath it didn't have a cut canvas cover or anything. So you could see into it, and you could climb into it if you wanted. And then I made a rug that was an American flag.
Mm-hmm.
Made out of faux fur and bones that I found in Colorado after those forest fires a couple years ago. And so people could climb into that and sit in it if they wanted and sort of maybe reflect in that space.
So it is pretty interactive then with your audience?
Yeah, I used to do more just illustration, but I've been leaning a lot more towards interactive art. I think if you can get people involved, then, you know, they're going to stick around and they're going to maybe think about it a little bit more.
So with your piece and the Art in the Loop, will it be interactive? Is it, again, political?
It has been interactive. for those performances, I've been going to different parts of the city and wearing this giant bare head
right.
that I have
right.
that I've made out of cardboard and Home Depot paint samples mm-hmm. that I mm-hmm. you know got from that department. And I just go and kind of stumble around with this big moonshine jug, and mm-hmm. I don't really like necessarily interact with people. Mm-hmm. I kind of let them come to me. But it's really interesting because whenever your identity is hidden, you can kind of be just really ridiculous, and then yeah. people sort of respond to that, and they come and they want to be ridiculous with you. So
what is that the thought behind the bear and the sort of stumbling around? What?
Well, there's a lot of things that I think could be taken from that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, as far as the moonshine jug goes, yeah. there's you know prevalent alcoholism within Native
right.
American communities. With you know the bear head, it's hiding my identity, so mm-hmm. it's kind of speaking to my own exploration about where I fit in within the Native American community. And I think mm-hmm. identity in general is a mm-hmm. pretty, I mean, it's a pretty big topic that's being talked about right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there's a lot of things that I feel like could be taken from
yeah.
these when you look
yeah.
at the documentation and, you know, see it all put together. But I also wanted to try to Stephen Colbert it a little bit and make it a little silly because
yeah.
I think people
yeah.
sort of maybe respond better to humor than they do really serious stuff that, you know, it's going to maybe
yeah.
bring them down a little bit.
I get that. Humor diffuses a lot of sort of the tension, the, you know, the difficulties that we have in life. When I viewed, you know, the bear headdress, it also made me think about the last time that I was in Estes Park last year and the encroachment that we have on the land and that the bears are coming right up to,
mm-hmm.
you know, buildings and businesses and homes for that
yeah.
matter because where else? They're sort of stumbling around.
They don't have anywhere else to go, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, now, the Art in the Loop, it opens this Friday.
Well, the Art in the Loop in general has been going on. There's been 9 performances
yeah.
going on and installations. So, yeah, that's been going on for a couple weeks now,
yeah.
and it'll be
yeah.
going on for the next, like, 8 weeks. So.
But, I mean, for your part.
Yeah, for
your
part.
Your piece will
I'll have six photographs on the Costantino's parking garage
uh-huh.
on display for about 8 weeks.
What's the address on that?
I don't remember.
Constantine's parking garage.
Yes.
Well, and actually, if downtownkc.org/art-in-the-loop, you can find more information about
yes.
that. Also, I want to, if you would give listeners your
my contact.
Website,
yeah.
blog.
I'm working on my website right now, so I like to direct people to either my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/youngbirdart,
uh-huh.
or my Instagram is where I put a lot of things up, which is @youngbird_art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I like this statement where, again, this is from Blair Shulman's piece that he had written about you, that you've decided to document your work with photos and videos to resist any expiration date. Let's talk about that. What do you mean expiration date?
Well, I think a lot of the stuff that I make, well, especially right now, since the materials that I use are so fragile,
yeah.
I mean, cardboard,
yeah.
I mean, the head that I made it about 6 months ago, and it's
mm.
already falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, it will have mm-hmm. its own expiration date,
mm-hmm.
and it will be done with, and maybe
yeah.
I'll recycle it into something else. But doing these performances and then taking the documentation allows me to, you know, preserve a part of that piece of art before
mm-hmm.
it has its
mm-hmm.
inevitable death.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then these the documentation can be found on your blog.
Yeah,
or
the documentation can be found mm-hmm. on Facebook and on Instagram, and then once I have mm-hmm. my website ready again.
Now, you told me recently you attended the Art Institute,
mm-hmm.
and you've lived in another part of the city, Springfield?
I lived
yeah.
in Springfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, I moved here in 2009.
Yeah. So, did you find, you know, in Springfield, it's fairly small community. Did you find that it was just maybe too small for what your work was about, or did you need to reach a different audience?
Yeah, I think all of the above, really. Springfield is, I love my hometown, you know.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's a lot of churches, it's a lot of conservative thought.
In the Bible Belt, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I'm sure that I wouldn't have I either probably would have gotten a negative response there, mm-hmm. or maybe not one at all. Mm-hmm. Which, I don't know, maybe that's mm-hmm. not a terrible thing. But, then I had the opportunity to come to the Art Institute, and I think especially now, the art world, the art community here in Kansas City is just, I feel like it's just growing so much.
It's exploded.
Yeah, it really has, and I think people are really responding well to a lot, I mean, all the art that's being made, and support. Mm-hmm. People are supporting each other, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's a really cool thing to see. So.
Now with that, I do want to ask you about the work. How is it perceived by Native Americans?
That's a great question. I actually wonder that sometimes, because, mm-hmm. honestly, I don't think there's a huge Native American community mm-hmm. in Kansas City, mm-hmm. especially one that is part of the art community. So, I think my art is definitely trying to find my place within that mm-hmm. world. It's almost like a gated community. They're very, like, protective of, you know, and I didn't grow up on a reservation or anything like that, so it's kind of me trying to find my place within that.
That's interesting. It's being a part of this culture and not really being a part of the culture and not having lived on the reservation.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird place to be. It's interesting. Yeah. I've been reading a lot of books lately about people who are Native American but haven't grown up in that culture, and there seems to be a really weird, like, almost a displacement where they don't know, you know, where do they fit in the
world.
Well,
does that offer you another venue to explore with your art, perhaps?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what motivates me to make things is, uh-huh. you know, that wondering, so... Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm being a Mexican American myself. My folks both spoke Spanish, but they didn't teach us. And down the road, my daughter learned Spanish. So there's always sort of that pocket. You're included in this group, mm-hmm. but you're not really included because you don't have the language, or you don't have, you know, sort of that cultural connection, you know, within the community. But you're still a part of that.
You're definitely still a part of it. And I've actually been learning Cherokee lately to try to, I don't know, immerse myself more in that culture and learn more about it, because I'm definitely part of it and I'm proud of it. Mm-hmm. But it's weird sometimes.
You know, it really is. So you work mostly sculptural paintings? Do you do print? Because I know we talked about printmaking.
At my job right now, we're doing a lot of printmaking, and it's just so much fun. So I actually went and bought a bunch of printmaking stuff last night. And so I'm going to do some of that, because I do a lot of illustration as well, like I said. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's really, like, meticulous line work, mm-hmm. which I think mm-hmm. would work really well with printmaking. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I do sculpture and installation and performance. And I don't do painting as much anymore, just because paint is really expensive. And it's also, since I'm doing so much more with these found materials and recycled materials, I'm trying to focus more on that right now. So.
Well, I know in the green room we were talking about printmaking, and... do you think it's sort of a lost art? Because, you know, talking about the institution, the Kansas City Art Institute, that I'm finding that what I'm told are people are making less, you know, prints, silkscreen and woodblock and linoleum.
Yeah, I hadn't ever really even learned anything about printmaking before I started at the job that I'm at. And I've gone to some printmaking classes, and, mm-hmm. It does feel like people, I mean, a lot of artists just don't even know, you know, any of the processes or how to do any of that. And
do you think it's maybe because it doesn't have that immediate sort of gratification or immediate sort of, like, look, you know, unlike, you know, something that you can photograph with a digital camera?
Yeah, because printmaking in general, I mean, especially if you're doing some of the more meticulous stuff, it goes through one process and then another and then another, and you have to go through all these things before it's actually done. So I think,
no one has time for that.
Nobody has time.
I mean,
for that.
You know, that's sort of the feeling that I get from people that, you know, they're sort of walking away from that.
Yeah, but I enjoy, which is another reason why I'm interested in printmaking now, is because I enjoy, like, multiple steps, you know, to get to a result within my art.
Mm-hmm.
Just like with the bare head, you know, mm-hmm. doing the building of the bear head, which is one, you know, that itself is one piece of the art, but then mm-hmm. I do the performance and then the documentation, and that result is, you know, another part of it. So, and it all fits together.
It comes together. Well, again, I want to mention your blog is youngbirdblog.blogspot.com. Also find Jillian Youngbird on facebook.com. And, you know, you can take a look at the work there. And Art in the Loop this Friday, July.
Next Friday.
Next Friday. So that would be August...
August 7th. Oh, yeah. It'll be out before then. But you will be able to see...
I need a calendar.
I know. I'm so mixed up with my dates right now. But, yeah, you'll be able to see it at First Friday, so...
Okay. Yeah. And unfortunately, that is not going to be the full moon like I told you.
Oh, no.
Friday is the full moon.
That's okay.
The blue moon, the second full moon this Friday.
Maybe they'll get printed on the full moon.
You know what? I love that. There's something so magical and mysterious about full moon.
I try to... my art practice kind of follows moon cycles. So,
you know, I love that. The moon, when it's full, I mean, it just has a different cast. Everything that's nighttime actually kind of has a daytime mm-hmm. look to it.
But it's all like a blue color. It's so pretty.
We need to do some collaborations.
I would love to.
Now, listen, do you have any parting words or anything that you want to tell our listeners that I haven't mentioned that I may have overlooked or missed?
I don't know. I think... I would really like for my work to, at some point, hopefully, open Kansas City up to more diverse art worlds, you know, different cultures, and there's a lot of stuff going on in the Latin community right now, too, here in Kansas City that's really cool, so just being open to that.
Just a quick question. How do we begin to open up dialogue? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Man.
Do you think it's a bit more sort of the... old guy, or not the old guys, they, you know, the familiar faces, do you think there's sort of exclusion?
I don't know, it's so hard to, I mean, I ask myself that question all the time about how to open dialogue, and I think that's sort of why I make art, is because I want to try to start some sort of discussion, but yeah, it's a difficult thing, especially when there's so many things that need dialogue right now.
Absolutely.
It's hard to,
political and
pick and choose which ones you need to focus on. So,
absolutely.
I don't know, it's a never-ending question, I think.
Well, I do want to thank you for coming today, this morning, or actually this afternoon. Jillian Youngbird will be at the Art in the Loop at Cosentino's Parking Garage. Thank you so much,
Thank you very much, Maria.
We're going to take a real quick break, and then we'll be right back with... our next guest, Cassandra Munt, with the National Toy and Miniature Museum.
The 10th Dimension Paranormal Group is hosting Paracon 2015. It's a paranormal conference to be held on Friday, July 31st and Saturday, August 1st. You can hear about ghost hauntings, UFOs, and Bigfoot. They'll be holding the event at the Old Sugar Creek Gym, 11232 Chicago Street, Sugar Creek, Missouri. For tickets and more information, go to KansasCityParacon.net. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
This week on American Roots, we're down by the riverside, listening to tales of steamboat captains and fishermen, traveling to the headwaters of the mighty Mississippi, and gliding downstream on the Belle of Louisville. Plus music and memories from Al Green, Johnny Cash, and Aaron Neville. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Wednesday evening from 7 to 9.
Welcome back. You're listening to Art Speak Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We just talked with Jillian Youngbird, an artist, live here in the studio. But next we have Cassandra Munt, who's the Community Development Coordinator for the National Toy and Miniature Museum. Now, if you don't know, the National Museum of Toys and Miniature, it serves to educate, inspire, and it delights adults and children with the museum's collection and the preservation of toys and miniatures that actually opened up in 1982 as the Toy and Miniature Museum of Kansas City, and it featured collections of Mary Harris Francis and Barbara Marshall. So we're going to talk to Cassandra, and she's going to update us on what's happening at National Toy and Miniature Museum. Welcome, Cassandra.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. We're very excited. August 1st, the museum reopens.
Yes, we are racing to the finish to put the final touches on everything, but we will be ready to go Saturday.
How exciting. How exciting. That is at 5235 Oak Street here in Kansas City, Missouri, toyandminiaturemuseum.org for more information. So with that renovation of the space, are we going to see a shift in the collection, maybe things that we haven't seen before?
Yes, there'll be a lot on view that wasn't before. Before we closed for renovations, we had a very beautiful building with a lot of wonderful objects on display. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a lot to tell you about what you were looking at. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot to play with, which is a shame when you're talking about a museum about toys. So we've added all new exhibits. We have one on dollhouses and one on iconic toys, mm-hmm. and there will be lots of hands-on opportunities.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the, if you can give us some samples of the iconic toys that we might see?
So we heard a lot from our visitors before we closed that they wanted to see the toys that they had actually played with. Uh-huh. And so we added a big iconic toys exhibit. So it goes from the 1950s up to just a sliver of the 2000s. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the men ooh and ah at the Star Wars collection.
They're shaking his head.
Yes. But we have everything from a Wrecker set to my life-size Barbie from the 1990s, Teddy Ruxpin from the 80s.
Oh, my Lord, yeah.
So it's a nice nostalgic punch to the gut that everybody really enjoys.
Okay, question for you. Do you have Chatty Cathy?
We do have. We have a Chatty Cathy, and we have a Chatty Baby. Unfortunately, the Chatty Baby got a haircut by her former owner, so it's an interesting situation, but they're both on view.
Is the Chatty Cathy blonde or brunette?
She's kind of a strawberry blonde, I would say. Yeah. Mm,
that's interesting. I mean, you know, this is, you know, it's just a lot of fun thinking about sort of the toys that we grew up with and that we grew up with and that we're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's going to be more active in what sense?
We have built in a lot of opportunities where people get to explore the collection even more. Mm. So our kind of bread and butter exhibit is called Toys from the Attic, Stories of American Childhood.
Oh, wow.
And it looks at the different influences that either as a culture we have had on toys. So there's a section on world events. And so you kind of have your sensitive issue, Trap the Jap game, which clearly existed in a certain time and place during World War II, but then also the influences the toys have had on us. We talked about the origin of the teddy bear and stuffed animals as comfort objects, and at the focal point in each of the seven sections is a toy where we know a lot about the child who once played with it. So there'll be some video interactives where you'll get to learn more about that. My favorite is he's called Raggy Doodle U.S. Parachute Trooper, and he's about a 4-inch tall stuffed doll that's attached to a parachute about World War II, and he belonged to a little boy who tells stories about the paratrooper going on combat missions and his dad having to rescue him from the rooftop of the house.
That's cool.
But he also talks about being a young boy growing up during World War II and using potatoes as hand grenades, playing war with his friends, and searching as part of the junior air wardens, looking for the outlines of Japanese enemy aircraft in the skies.
Wow. Wow, that's a lot. About your collection, how do you come about, getting pieces, here and there?
So our collection has more than 72,000 objects in it. And as you mentioned earlier, we were started by two local Kansas City women who were friends, and one had the toys and one had the miniatures. The miniatures, the majority of them are from that original collection, because not everyone collects fine-scale miniatures. But the toys have really grown over the years, and we get a lot of donations, a lot of people who, you know, just uncovered this thing in the attic that they didn't know they still had. Or there are lots of collectors out there who really, you know, collect 20th century dollhouses or collect tin and mechanical toys, and, you know, when they're ready to move on, they find a good home for their collection.
You know, with shows such as, the Antique Roadshows mm-hmm. and that, do you have people that come to your offices or when you were open and say, you know, this is something that my grandfather had, can you give me an estimate? I mean, do you have people that are sort of wanting a little bit of information about the value of objects?
Yes, we do have that happen, and we try to stay away from talking about the value of our collection,
sure.
But we always try to point people in the right direction to where they could assess that
uh-huh.
sort of thing.
Uh-huh. So I have to ask you honestly, well, or dishonestly, what is some of your favorite toys to sort of look at in the collection?
My favorite, absolute favorite, although I give tours of the museum and I say favorite about 20 times, but my absolute favorite is she's a Victorian era swimming doll. So she lays on her stomach and she does the breaststroke when you turn a mechanical key that's in her stomach. Mm. And she just has a very, what would have been an appropriate swimming outfit for the time, but looks very simple and stark, mm-hmm. and her head is kind of turned
wow.
in a very creepy direction. So she's very creepy. She's probably the creepiest toy that we have on uh-huh. exhibit. But mm-hmm. She actually wouldn't have been played with by children. She would have been used by adults, you know, after they had dinner and were enjoying cocktails and cigars in the library.
Oh, right.
They would have pulled her out for entertainment.
Wow. So is she dressed, again, in the period piece that you might have seen someone wear during that time? Is
yes.
it like wool down to your ankles? Or
it's kind of a full body, probably what yeah. we would look at as like a romper today with
okay.
sleeves and, yeah. and long legs on it. But it's all a very plain cotton fabric.
How much exhibition space do you have? Did you gain a lot during this renovation?
We did. So we didn't add to the building at all,
uh-huh.
but we reallocated the building footprint. So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot more exhibition space than there used to be. And we, I think, more artfully displayed the collection than we had
mm-hmm.
previously.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more on display. We also built in a lot of opportunities to rotate the collection.
Okay.
One of the probably most important things for the preservation of objects is for them to be able to sit in the dark for a while
yeah.
away from the lights
yeah.
24/7. So we'll be able to rotate through a lot of things. So there'll always be something new to look at.
Now, as the National Museum of Toys and Miniature Museum, are you the only, or do we have the only National Museum of Toys, or is that something that we can kind of share with Smithsonian?
We're a specialty niche museum. So whereas the Nelson Atkins, for example, has lots of art, they collect mm-hmm. all sorts of art, not just impressionist art, whereas we just collect fine scale miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of museums across the United States that have fabulous collections of
mm-hmm.
toys, but they're not solely dedicated to the exhibition of those toys,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of their toys aren't on public display.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have the world's largest and finest miniature collection.
Mm-hmm.
And we have one of the largest toy collections
wow.
and one of the largest ones that's actually on public display.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the collection at the museum, is it also going to, does the season reflect what you'll see in the museum?
In terms of the objects on display?
Yeah, in terms of, like, it's Halloween, so we're going to kind of maybe gather some more sort of Halloween-y toys and miniatures and that sort of thing. Does it follow that, the holidays? Or
the no? only thing that we do a significant thing for is the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Several of our dollhouses and our miniatures have period holiday decorations that we'll put out. And then we have a really fabulous doll in our collection made by an American doll artist who,
wow.
She's completely paper mache and then hand painted, and
mm-hmm.
they were painted to look like the little girls who would own them. And she's in really fabulous condition, and
wow.
all the doll collectors always want to see her. But because she is paper mache and hand painted, we only bring her out every once in a while. So she'll
That's
come out every holiday
delicate.
Season.
Mm-hmm.
Her name's Miss Mary, and she'll have
mm-hmm.
a little tea
mm-hmm.
That people will be able to come to.
Now, besides the collection itself, do you offer tours to visitors?
We do offer group tours, but for the most part, the museum experience is, you can really get the full museum experience without having to go on a tour, but we're happy to offer them.
And if you have a large group that wants to come in and take a look at the collection, would it be smart for them to give you a heads up, a call?
Yes, it sure is. Simply to help expedite the process of
sure.
getting your group in and on their way to exploring the collection.
Well, that number is 816-235-8000. Again, the Toy and Miniature Museum is located at 5235 Oak Street here in Kansas City, Missouri, just really right down the street from us. Toyandminiaturemuseum.org is the website, and we are so excited that it's reopening after 3 years?
A year and a half.
A year and a half, yes. August 1st, the museum will reopen, and you can take a look at the different toys that you didn't get to see when they closed.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have any final words or anything that I should mention to our listeners?
I think the part that we didn't really touch on a whole lot is our fine scale miniature collection. So, fine scale miniatures are scaled pieces of full size objects. Most of our collection is 1/12 scale, so 1 inch in the miniature equals 12 inches in the full scale. So within our collection, you can tour the world. You can go to the Palace of Versailles.
Wow.
You can see a house from Boston's Beacon Hill. And you can travel through time. You can see a Frank Lloyd Wright house. And then you can see works of art from all of the major art museums in the United States. We have miniature versions of works from the Nelson and the Met and Winterthur Museum. And it's all super accessible because it's tiny.
You know, that's going to be a really joy for people to see. And especially since we still have a little bit of time before people go back to school.
Mm-hmm.
Kids go back to school.
And we have air conditioning.
Very good. You know, I want to tell our listeners that I have several sets of tickets to the National Museum of Toys and Miniature Museum that Cassie brought today, and very gracious, and we thank you for that. So what I'm going to do is take the first caller. No, let me backtrack. I'm going to take the second caller win two free tickets to the National Museum of Toys and Miniature. And if you call 931-816-931-5534, we'll get your name and information. And you'll have to pick those up here at the station, business hours 8 through 5, Monday through Friday. Thank you so much, Cassie.
Thank you so much
for sharing all the information, and we look forward to the museum. We'll be right back with ArtSpeak Radio. Jackie Denning from Kansas City, Missouri, who's won those tickets. Give me a call again. I'm going to take the third caller. We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio.
speaks to Kansas City native Richard Rhodes, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of How to Make an Atomic Bomb, on Tell Somebody, Thursday morning at 9.
Given all the distractions that there are, it is very easy to take our eye off the ball. If there is a ball that is important to keep our eye on, which I think there is.
I'm Craig Bailey. Join me for an hour of music, politics, religion, and more. It's Roger Waters, Amused to Death.
Thursday night at 7 p.m. on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome back to Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd. We have our two winners. We have Jackie and we have Brian. So you'll need to pick those tickets up here at the station between business hours, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday at 3901 Main Street. We're going to have a couple more tickets to give away, but it will be towards the end of the show. So thank you for calling. My next guest, people adore him. People love him. They throw roses at his feet. Well, I don't know about that. But he has a huge following because he is the proprietor of Hammer Space Workshop, which is home to Kansas City's awesome community of makers, crafters, and inventors. It's where you go to exercise your creativity. It's where you bulk up your knowledge and work out your designs. You rip up a board, sandblast a rusty tool, etch a circuit board, 3D print a missing piece, and so much more. So we want to welcome Dave Dalton of Hammer Space Workshop to ArtSpeak Radio.
Thanks, Maria.
Last time you were here, we had the phones ringing like crazy because people wanted to ask questions about how do I do this, how do I do that. So what's happening in Hammer Space Workshop world?
Well, we've been growing dramatically since the last time I was here. We've added a couple of new major tools. Some really exciting stuff, large format CNC routers, and adding to our large kennel of laser cutters, which is a lot of fun. I mean, having a computer-controlled plasma cutter and a variety of laser cutters is about as close as I'll ever get to having my own lightsaber.
Wow.
So that's a lot of fun. We've been growing and changing and expanding some of the space and just generally increasing the level of services and tools we have available for our creative members.
Now, because of that, because of, you know, the addition of tools and all that, have you kind of outgrown the space? Are you seem pretty well suited for Brookside?
We definitely have kind of maxed out our current internal space, but we were very fortunate to acquire a property that has lots of spare green room around it. And we have been hard at work building additional structures and expanding the space as, you know, as budgets allow. So that we can offer more space for neater, bigger tools more elaborate projects.
You know, I want to tell our listeners that if you just tuned in, we're talking to Dave Dalton of Hammer Space Workshop, which is here in Kansas City. Actually, it's located at 440 East 63rd Street, Kansas City, Missouri. And the website, I believe, is hammerspacehobby.com.
Yes, that's
very good.
Correct.
You know, Dave, can you tell us a little bit, because this is such a wonderful story, how you became a creator, an inventor, and in that?
Well, I give a lot of credit to my maternal grandfather, who was an aeronautical engineer back in the golden age of aviation. So he used to sit across the desk from Howard Hughes out at the TWA overhaul base and sketch on plans, and he just had the bug bite him as a child when he saw planes, the early crop dusters, flying overhead. And to him, I mean, that was his internet and fuel cell car and rocket and everything else rolled into one. All he wanted to do was build planes. But I watched him as a child put together a steam engine that he made by hand in his garage and then stuffed into a Ford Pinto and proceeded to drive for a decade. So I kind of got the idea from a young age that when you want to do something, no matter how ridiculous or insane it sounds, there's value to that, and you should just go do it.
And that informed you, you know, that life lesson informed you on how to develop this Hammerspace?
Well, the idea didn't strike me for a number of years. Mm-hmm. I, of course, had a creative bug bite me very, very young. Mm-hmm. I was silversmithing and blacksmithing in my teenage years. I was fortunate to have a school that had really nice metal shops and wood shops.
No kidding.
And there was a nice long period after that where schools kind of eliminated the wood shop and metal shop environments being this dangerous and expensive component to education. And we kind of lost touch with our sort of American identity of people who make the new inventions. And that's a shame. And I've had a couple of experiences in my life where I had access to high-level tools for making something really neat that then I lost access to those tools. Mm-hmm. First, I was a blacksmith apprentice and eventually a master smith, but one of our younger apprentices burned our forge down while we were out of town. And one day you can make anything you want out of metal, and the next you're just kind of like you're Superman with a kryptonite necklace.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do all these things, just not at the moment. I spent years as a factory mechatronics technician designing robots that drill and staple and cut. And when the economics in the United States shifted away from domestic manufacturing rather abruptly with, you know, an economic crunch and banks no longer handing out little short-term loans for small manufacturers, we had to reimagine the way our business worked. And suddenly, instead of a production floor full of machines that I could use to make anything in my spare time, it was all being made out of state and shipped in.
Mm-hmm.
And again, overnight, I went from having CNC routers and table saws and drill presses to having nothing but the tools in my toolbox with which to make things. And if you're a creative person, you know that there are tons of linchpin obstacles that you face in trying to create your art or your engineering or your solution or your product.
Mm-hmm.
And any one of those obstacles can spell the end of a creative adventure. If you don't have the right tool or the space or the power or the time or the money to buy those things, then your ideas stay these nebulous things that you stick in your someday box.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you don't pull them out until you've solved all of those problems. And so our goal is really to take those obstacles out of the way and let Kansas City's creative people concentrate on what they do best, which is making awesome things.
Yeah. Tell us a bit of the things that have come through the workshop or some of the things that people have walked away with after, you know, spending some time at Hammerspace.
There are just so many things I can barely even contain in my head the things that people have made in our space.
I think of Dick Daniels. You know, he's a local artist here that was at Hallmark for a number of years, and so he had his cartoon sort of ideas, and now they're
Dick's been with us for a long time. He was a very early supporter of the space, and he and several other recent, we're calling them Hallmark graduates, who have graduated from Hallmark into full-time freelance artists, have had to find a new studio to work from after having those kinds of resources for years.
Yeah.
Suddenly being on your own is a bit of a shock. And so having an equally art-centric community to join and bounce ideas off of, I think, has been really helpful. And it's so nice to have Dick around because he teaches all of the techniques that he uses in his art in a class at our space. So instead of jealously guarding his secrets, he kind of embraces our sort of motto around there, which is, you know, these skills need to be passed on.
Because I've seen his work as print and printmaking and silkscreen on T-shirts and most recently carriers for beer or other liquid materials and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's actually a collaboration with another one of our members, Pat Koroginas, and he's another early adopter of the space and just one of our really fun success stories. Mm-hmm. Pat spent 30 years as an insurance salesman, and actually he was featured in a Kansas City Star article this past week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was very nice. But he was just a fantastic salesman and quietly working on woodworking projects mm-hmm. and electronics projects in his basement. And I met him at his garage sale when I was buying some of his old woodworking tools. And when he inquired about where his tools were going, he came to visit the workshop, and he hasn't left since. And he let his insurance license expire and mm-hmm. became a full-time maker. And he's really embraced the whole making things as a new career.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes out to local businesses and finds out what they need and designs and makes it for them using the resources of the space.
That's great. You know, I have to mention, too, to our listeners that it's not just about the adults and students, but you also have workshops for younger children.
Yeah, well, creativity is an all-age sort of thing.
Agree.
We start our makers as young as they're ready to get mm-hmm. creative. We even have a young makers room in the back of our building mm-hmm. full of Legos and other creative building blocks and magnet mm-hmm. walls and such, so that when you have a family, you can come in and engage in some sort of mm-hmm. creative process without having to worry about, well, are the kids going to get bored halfway through? And what do they do if they want to help at the beginning and after an hour they're so tired?
So what is the age that you can begin them at? Because you don't want little Johnny to rip off his thumb on a saw blade, do you?
Well, the
or maybe you do.
The wood and metal shop area is restricted to 18 and over without a parent helping, but as soon as mom and dad, or dad and dad, or mom and mom is all ready to have a kid in there ready to work on a project, then we encourage them to get right in and start learning those skills. I mean, Boy Scouts are building Pinewood Derby cars at 8 and up. I've had 6-year-olds learning to solder and 8-year-olds learning to cast with pewter. So mm-hmm. really all ages mm-hmm. are excited about turning their ideas into reality.
And I know from time to time you have an open house. Do you have one coming up anytime soon?
Well, actually, we have one every Thursday from uh-huh. 6 to 9, where you can come in and check out the space. And this is also our social night for the week. So many members who are current members of the mm-hmm. space come down to greet folks who are giving tours and also to communicate with one another and spend mm-hmm. some social time together and have a cold beverage or eat a pizza and work on a project. And just about every Thursday, some weird new collaboration appears by the end of the evening that I never would have dreamed up. When you get folks who are interested in electronics and woodworking and metalworking and laser cutting and programming and everything in one room, you can make just about anything you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Now, without giving out any prices, this is based on a membership, is that right? But can people just kind of just drop in for a day? Oh, say I need to use a table saw. Can I drop in for a day and just kind of...
Well, we've kind of moved away from doing day passes.
Okay.
That's something that we used to do. So we have monthly, 6-month, or year memberships mm-hmm. That, of course, get cheaper the longer you are a member. But the day pass sort of model doesn't really work for the kind of workshop that we are. Yeah. There are just too many tools mm-hmm. and too much to learn for mm-hmm. someone to just come in for a mm-hmm. day.
Now, if you're not familiar with working with a 3D printer, for instance, is someone there to assist you to kind of walk you through this is how you...
Yes, we have staff there during our office hours mm-hmm. 6 to 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Nominally, I'm not there on Mondays, but the rest of our staff is, so mm-hmm. really pretty much 7 days a week. There's someone there to help you out. We have classes that can help people get those more complicated skills, or we have members who offer their services as mentors. So if there's something you'd like to learn that falls outside of a class that you might have, for instance, you could come and learn to weld in a class, but if you want to learn how to mm-hmm. weld a dune buggy, mm-hmm. that's going to be outside the purview of a class. So you mm-hmm. could perhaps engage someone like one of our staff members, Joseph, who used to work at a scooter shop, mm-hmm. to help you build your vehicle by engaging him on an hourly basis to help you through the finer points of constructing that sort of thing.
You know, it's really interesting because when we spoke last time, when you were on air, we had several people calling in and wanting to know how do I fix my barbecue grill? How do I do this? How do I do that? So even if people have just maybe a question or they need some technical assistance, can they give you a call, or is it best to just have them?
Sure, absolutely. We encourage people to contact us either through our website or Facebook page or by the phone. And it's not just about artists and creative folks. It's also people who just need to solve a problem.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you have this old piece of equipment that it's got one broken gear, but it's wonderful other than that. And what do? They don't sell the gear anymore.
Yeah.
That happens like once a week. But also business owners and small business have discovered that the makerspace and hackerspaces are a good source of solutions to problems that are outside the normal architecture of solving business problems.
Right.
Because if you need a prototype made or a custom solution to a manufacturing problem, we also have a service in-house that provides drafting and embedded systems programming and short-run fabrication and manufacturing capabilities that are on par with what advanced businesses have available to them for startups and inventors and individuals who just have a need to employ someone with a high level of skills to complete a particular task.
Yeah, I love this, that on the information that I have in front of me, it says wood and metalworking, silver and blacksmithing, welding, molding, casting, soldering, electronics, robotics, rocketry, airbrushing, or just fixing a broken doohickey. You can learn to do it all yourself. 440 East 63rd, Kansas City, Missouri. Telephone is 913-686-6562. HammerspaceHobby.com. Also, and I've read here that you can build a robot lawnmower.
Sure, robot lawnmower. My most recent robot was featured at this year's Maker Faire. Its name is Osiris for the optically sensing intruder-repelling irrigation system. And it's a water cannon that watches our parking lot and paints intruders with a trio of red laser spots a la the Predator. And then if that fails to dissuade them, it sprays them with a water cannon with a great deal of accuracy until they leave the vicinity. So much cheaper than a security guard. Robots are my favorite sorts of employees. They're robot slaves that we don't have to pay.
You just have to build them. Very good. Dave, did I miss anything? Is there something that might want to tell our listeners that we may have overlooked?
Well, I just encourage the folks in Kansas City not to give up on your crazy ideas.
Yeah, there you go.
There's no time like the present. And if there's one thing that we've learned at Hammerspace, the question is not why, the question is why not.
Terrific. Beautiful. Again, HammerspaceHobby.com. Every Thursday is an open house from 6 to 9. They're at 440 East 63rd Street, Kansas City, Missouri. Will you come back?
I would be happy to come back anytime, Maria.
You know what we should do sometime? Just sort of an hour of questions. Just call in. Just ask Dave. Dave will tell you.
I would be happy to do that. And I'll haul my cohort Craig along with me, who's our other component there, who helps with all of the he's just a wonder and does all the electronics and custom fabrication.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
You know, while you're tuned in to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, ArtSpeak Radio, I want to mention to our listeners that we have a fundraiser that's coming up. That sounds, y'all might like this. It's really geared for it's a one-day retreat for writers, poets, painters, photographers, and curious others. It is called White Noise, Embracing the Spirit. So it's just a visit on the grounds of the Belvoir Winery, 170 breathtaking acres. People can bring their cameras, their canvas, their paints, the notebooks and journals, gather your art supplies, come out to the Odd Fellows home, which is Belvoir Winery at 1325 Odd Fellows Road, Liberty, Missouri, for a one-day retreat for more information, you can go to kkfi.org. You can also contact me here at the station. But, you know, we're going to just have a day of art and poetry, just whatever sort of fills your creative spirit. And speaking of spirits, I might mention that recently the Belvoir Winery had an episode of Vintage Spirits that was filmed on location, and you can find that on Ghost Hunters on their episode season 9, I believe. I would like to say to... Let me get this in order. I want to thank all our guests this afternoon. I want to thank Jillian Youngbird and Cassie Munt of the National Toy and Miniature Museum. Dave Dalton, Hammer Space Workshop. Thank you all so much for coming on the radio. You know, you'll be back, I'm sure, right? Yes. They said yes. Please stay tuned for Afternoon Jazz with Jeff Harshberger at 1. At 3 o'clock, Old G's Hangout with Groovy Grant. At 6 o'clock, we have All Souls Forum. 7 o'clock, American Roots. 9 p.m., Classical Challenge. Thank you so much for tuning in, my listeners of KKFI 90.1 FM. As I mentioned, I do have two more tickets to give away for the Toy and Miniature Museum. If you call when I close out tonight, this afternoon, if you call 816-931-5534, I'll take the first and the second caller. You do have to pick those up here at the station at 3901 Main Street during business hours, 8 to 5, and they'll be at the front desk. So I want to, again, thank you all for tuning in, making KKFI a priority. Next week, we have the beautiful, talented photographer, writer, author, Pete Doolin in the studio with us. Thank you so much for tuning in. Honey, I'm coming home.